Hi, Silverdale.
Hi there, Pat. Now, you know, everything is being recorded from here on out. So be
I'm
careful
hope.
of what you say to me.
Thank you. So what things shouldn't we say to you?
Well, I think almost anything you say will be true since you're a true person.
We were talking earlier today with Claude, and he was saying about how his mother had taught him that saying, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Right.
But after running an arts organization, I kind of modified it to, if you can't say anything nice, just be vague.
Okay, I like that, yeah.
So we're impressed. We're trying to fill David's shoes. So it's good that you're on early for us. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And listen, I'm very excited about what Pat has proposed here. You know, investigating a couple of the sermons, what a nice way to jump ahead and see where we're going.
Yes. And you know, when I've done some of the research on the books, it really helps to go to the sermons because the sermons really provides, they flesh it out a little bit.
Oh, great. Uh-huh.
So that's been really useful.
By the way, Tamara, I'd like to put a bug in your ear. Now, remember, all this is being recorded, so... apparently, although Dave posted the video for last Wednesday night,
yes.
The week before that, when we made our first presentation on the book of El Mu'min, on this new stream, it has not been posted. I mean, it's like the exception to the rule. Everything is posted fairly quickly. That one is still absent.
He wrote me, I don't know whether it was late last night or this morning, and said he would like to get my notes so that he could post my notes with your presentation.
Right. He copied me on that email as well, and that is for Wings of Chaos. But
yes.
What I'm talking about is this new stream, you know, what we're doing tonight, and they normally post each of the broadcasts, you know, within a day or so of when it's done.
Yeah, you're right. We'll have to handle that for next week because I know Vinny did a nice job promoting it at one of the ashram programs.
Microphone check.
Oh, great.
Check.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It'd be nice to send an email out about it.
Well, listen, I'm interested in it for an entirely personal reason, but anyway.
Good.
I guess there's personal and then impersonal reasons, right?
Yeah, well, the personal reason is, you know, I gave one of the presentations, and I lack conviction when I speak, so I like to go back and listen to, you know, what did I say? And as it turned out, after the broadcast had ended a couple of weeks ago, you know, I went back and immediately re-listened to it. I was, hey, I learned a lot from myself. I didn't know. And so I wanted to go back and listen to it a second time, but of course it hasn't been posted yet, so.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes, I don't have that so much with my written presentations, but I find that sometimes with my poetry, I'll go back to poetry that I wrote, you know, years ago, and I'll think, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, or I might have improved it in this way or that way.
Oh dear, they're putting a big mic in front of my face.
Okay.
The good thing is it's in my face. The bad thing is it's in front of my face. Hello.
Hey, who's that?
Who is who?
Well, it sounded like another voice had come on to the telephone, a female voice.
This phone doesn't stay on here,
well,
right?
Do whatever. He didn't give me an instruction about that.
Doesn't that phone go elsewhere?
Dad, have the phone.
Put it down over there?
I don't know. Maybe we could leave it there. But I think the speaker
goes over the speaker.
Microphone check. Are you there?
Pat, you're certainly broadcasting. What about camera?
So that's way low. I don't know what happened to the volume now. I've got to put the volume up.
Probably.
Yeah? No. No, you have no idea how to do that.
Volume is up.
Okay. Maybe you want to take this.
So, Dale, are you being able to hear us?
Well, listen, Pat's microphone is working quite well. I haven't heard Tamara's microphone, and I'm having trouble hearing myself on the phone, although I'm starting to hear myself now, so the volume's been turned off. It's fine.
But you were sounding fine, but then all of a sudden you sound very far away.
Oh, there we go. And now I've just put mine on mute.
Hello? We are live. It is 7 o'clock. And
is live stream working for you?
Yes, we're ready. Ready or not, we're here.
Well,
it's Wednesday night.
No, broadcast went off. It needs to stay on because it's
Wednesday night in the higher dimensions.
And can you talk, Silverdale?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it just came up, broadcast ended, so it's rebooting at the moment.
Okay, but we can hear it. He's setting the mic.
Okay, great. And listen, it did sound like the mics were performing pretty well for both of you and for the telephone.
He says the mics are performing well. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Silverdale, did you hear?
You know,
They're taking the live stream down and coming back up, and you shouldn't have to do anything. It should keep you on when it comes back up.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see, huh?
Yeah. Well, it has actually. It's
actually now.
Broadcasting again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going down now.
Oh, okay.
Remember, there's a lag.
That's right.
I mean, there's an additional lag.
Look, and everything is actually happening at one time. We're just not perceiving it in such a way.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
We only need to recall what's really happening, which is nothing.
That's right. Yeah, there it is. It ended in them.
It ended. Okay, well, then I'll get myself ready. More thing I would love to.
Would you like, maybe I can get it for you?
I don't know if you can get it or not. I think there's a joy of sacrifice over there. That's what I would like, a joy of sacrifice. But
I see very well.
Oh, George, she says we're back up.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And one of the ways I verify that for myself is, can I put a text message in the chat box? And yeah, I just did after Lost Horizon, so you are back on the air.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. And do we have Dick with us? Great. Thank you, Dick. So, can I start? Then I can't start until I can press the button.
And in any event, Pat, I want to remind you this has been recorded since you originally pressed that button about 10 minutes ago.
I'm going to let somebody else handle that part of it. I was lucky to get... the phone in place and the button pushed to begin with, never mind when.
That's right. That's right. And I don't know if Dave's able to edit, but if he is, I'm sure he could just splice the first, 10 minutes out.
Exactly.
So when you're ready, you can give a formal beginning.
We will do that. We will actually indicate that in a moment because we're just going to get our button pushed now.
I think I've had my button pushed earlier.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to the ABD Guide Show. This is week number 28. And we're going to be having a little bit of a different time this evening. First of all, David is with us. Can't you tell? He is with us in full spirit, which is where we're going to be visiting this evening. And Tamara and I are going to do our very best to manifest something for, if not your pleasure or your edification, at least for your entertainment.
Yes. I just wonder if I get my money back.
We do have an extra participant this evening. Dick Hart will be contributing as he is in the phone line with Dan on the looking on the screen. So it'll be a slight delay in addition to the original lag, which we always have. There will be another bit of a delay in pulling the data from Dick to that telephone and into this microphone and therefore to you. So let's start with a hello from Dick.
And Dick says hello.
Hello from Dick. The American Book of the Guidebook, as David has reminded us, is three distinct parts. The first introductory preparatory material covers some areas that we investigated for the purpose of basically getting our bearings to try and collect ourselves and get the excursion underway. And we then began each of the books as they are numbered as a expedition with a small group on the scouting tour, bringing back to our larger group their field notes and some conclusions and some maps and some songs and some dances, some prayers, some treasures. And we're going to take a pause from that journey. We're going to be in an oasis for the next couple of weeks. We're going to refresh ourselves from the third section of the American Book of the Dead guidebook by dipping in to the section called the Sunday Sermons. Now, I want to give you a little historical preface. The Sunday Sermons were delivered as sermons in Crestline, California, at the Crestline Theological Seminary Chapel, Clear Light Chapel, in 1973 and 74. And the Sunday sermons have a quality to them where if you can put yourself into the receptive mood of receiving a sermon. So whatever that posture might be for you, if you would be sitting relaxed, or if you would be sitting upright, or if you would be lying in repose, the Sunday sermons are going to be read to you, and then we're going to have a little opportunity for people to contribute through the chat or online, and the folks here where we're all gathered will also offer their pieces. So I'm going to start the Sunday sermon by Reverend Dr. E.J. Gold, D.D. 1. If you want to bring peace to the patient, you first must relieve your own spiritual bondage and fears.
Fears are dispelled by understanding the truth and by recognizing spiritual error and ridding oneself of spiritual error.
You can't heal another's fears when you have fears of your own about death and rebirth.
The practitioner who lacks real empathy for his fellow beings cannot practice real divine science.
Without affinity for other spiritual beings like yourself, you will lack the strength necessary to guide someone through the transit world.
You must also watch within yourself the tendency to become overwhelmed when the patient unveils his own fears about death and rebirth.
The sick and dying tend to become overwhelmed with terror at their own imagination and beliefs. And even those who have been trained in this can sometimes cave in when pain and illness cause confusion in them.
Sometimes a being just can't center with all that pain.
But at the end, the pain will dissipate and he'll see where he's going.
The practitioner should always remain calm and centered in his own spiritual essence during the moments of death, in the presence of fear, illness, and confusion, because he knows about death and what happens between death and rebirth, and he is able to center on that, on the knowledge of what is really happening spiritually during illness, dying, and death.
He knows that life is simply the interplay of the primal forms of consciousness, and that the whole universe is all composed of pure spirit, that matter and energy are just ideas within the dream, and that the entire cosmos is nothing more or less than the shining, luminous void of reality
and that it always has been and always will be that.
If you want to free the spirit, you have to heal the spirit first.
Being can get pretty sick from exposure to the material world after a few trillion years or so.
Just being in that heavy field of matter and energy and being in the belief that he has a body and that he has desires and aggressions can leave a spiritual being in pretty bad condition.
So, you have to heal the spirit before you can free the spirit.
If you want to heal the spirit, you must not bury the teaching within a form.
The tender encouragement and certainty that you can give to the sick and dying and to the deceased in their confusion, your patient removal of their fears are many times better than buckets of tears, relatives in grief and disharmony, flowery speeches, and pretty funerals with lots of flowers and an expensive casket.
All these are nothing but grotesque parodies of the knowledge of the teaching, and they do no good for the deceased.
You, the practitioner, can maintain the spirit through all the grief, fear, and confusion that he or his family and friends might go through.
You may be the only truly centered and calm being in the presence of death, but you must never give in to the infectious hysteria of grief, fear, and confusion about death.
In fact, you don't have to.
Because the fear, let me give you that again, because fear, grief, and confusion are caused by not knowing anything. I'm sorry. One more try. Because fear, grief, and confusion are caused by not knowing about something, being overwhelmed by a mystery, and death and rebirth are no mystery to you.
So there is no real need to get involved in confusion. Just because someone else doesn't know about death and rebirth.
And if you want to stop their fears and confusions about it, just give them a copy of the American Book of the Dead.
And that completes this first Sunday sermon, number one. Now, just imagine the first time that you attended a church service and listened to a sermon and you actually heard the sermon and understood the sermon and that was the sermon that you heard. And with that in mind, please listen to this other small piece. Does not become easier as one approaches the end. It gets worse, much worse, and this, the last temptation, will seem the hardest barrier of all because it is so easy to fall for just one moment. But at the end of the corridor, 30 birds await your arrival. That is the last sentence. from the joy of sacrifice. I'm going to read one paragraph from this sermon again, just so that you can remind yourself of this sermon when you're thinking about this later. If you want to free the spirit, you have to heal the spirit first. And the end of that paragraph says, so you have to heal the spirit before you can free the spirit. And the next sentence says, if you want to heal the spirit, you must not bury the teaching within a form. So I think we've seen from the previous 27 weeks of working with the material from the first six books of the dead that all of the additional materials that we have, that we bring to our study, enriches this process. So I'm going to open it up for comment. That's the clue. Cue. The cue. We don't have a connection? Okay.
Well, we're making the connection. I just, you know, personally, the sermons to me are incredible. I mean, you read the one about if you want to free the spirit, you have to heal the spirit first. But the paragraph before that, he knows that life is simply the interplay of the primal forms of consciousness. I mean, that whole paragraph to me is such a profound statement of that we kind of unravel in each of the books. But from a practical level, I've had the experience at being at several deathbeds, and you know, I come from a family that is pretty churched and has a strong faith, but I know that in that experience there was still all those emotions that are talked about. You know, the confusion and the fear and it was very profound to be able to sit in the space, and the closest experience I could put it to is like a childbirth, when you're as a midwife, that you see a person that's going through tremendous labor, you can support them and create an environment, but they have to go through the experience. But it makes such a difference to have someone who's there present during that. And then, as I have told Patricia in the past, is that when my father had died, and my sister, who was professor, Reverend Doctor of Divinity, had done the blessing, her work was done, and my work was just beginning. And that was such a gift. And every death that I've gone through since that, these tools just become very profound, because until you're in the middle of that deathbed perspective, you don't know how valuable this tool is for yourself, stay centered, as well as the gift for the person who is going through transit.
Thank you. Commentary, Silverdale.
Well, I think what struck me is a better appreciation for the word practitioner, so that as I'm listening to the sermon, I'm thinking, well, let's see, this practitioner apparently has developed their presence to the point of such stability that they are not confused by the illusion of phenomena. All phenomena is illusion. So this really reflects the practitioner's posture in the midst of whatever the surrounding circumstances might be, apparently tragic in this case, but only because when we perceive, in quotation marks, tragedy, the death of somebody, this is only the interplay of the five primal elements of the waking consciousness, frankly, in the absence of presence. But for a practitioner with presence, it's just the American Book of the Dead. There's the disintegration of the personality and the emergence of that essence of the dying person, whether it's completely undeveloped, partially developed, or fully developed. So that's kind of what I'm imagining as I'm listening to the sermon in the pew.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that.
and by the way, Pat, I want to reemphasize it. You actually took my line from me when you said, I was particularly impressed by the sentence, if you want to free the spirit, you have to heal the spirit first. Because I know that's what I've been able to verify in my own experience. All of us are seeking to heal our own spirit through the efforts and exercises of self-remembering and work on self, practical work on self. And in this way, we do gradually heal our own spirit, and then our presence begins to grow, and then we become practitioners in the fullest sense of the word. So anyway, that's it.
Nicely put. Yeah, it is a process. But yeah, you do have to recognize what is the significance, what is the part that we can do something about, and what is the part that really needs our attention.
Right.
Are you ready over there?
We have a comment in the chat from Risa24th. I think another way of seeing it, if one don't want to debate what healing means, can be looked at as realizing that you never were ill in the first place. So death, disease, or fear are those doors that can be open in terms of liberation.
Okay. We can carry that along for further comment and discussion coming forth.
To speak to the point that you made, Brisa, in the book, The Angel Healing Guide, that point is also discussed, that in a sense it's a lack of alignment. And so when there is a realignment between the essential self and, well, your whole sort of continuum, then that restores health. And so the idea is, like, you can read, for example, in the ashram right now, they're reading chamber 11 with the angel who helps restore the health for those who are experiencing cancer. So it's not that the body is going to be changed, but that there's a realignment between this being and the angelic bodies, is one way to put it. I also kind of wanted to make a little bit of comment about sermons are part of liturgy in the church. So if you look at the word liturgy, it means the work of the people. So So what we're doing here together is we've shared a sermon, but really the real work is the liturgy of all of us working.
The speaking
and
of the people.
Yes.
Yes. That is exactly right. Have we got it now? Dan?
Yes.
Does he have comment now? Good. Okay. So this is a two-way transmission. It's got to come from one phone into another phone, and then we'll hear it.
Dick is saying that being present, being calm, present, and attentive to the dying person without any of your own trip being run is the most important thing. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Calm, present, and attentive. Yes. The qualities of a seeker, if we use the technology from Joy of Sacrifice, is to be able to be contemplating in a calm manner and observant and attentive and present. So it asks for all of the qualities of full awakened beingness in the moment and also manifesting. That's the other quality.
This brings it back for me, Patricia, to something I said last week towards the end, that the contact exercise has been such a cornerstone in my personal and professional life, and because that's where you practice that skill. Not only, I mean, it's kind of easy to be sort of calm and centered within yourself if no one's around, but can you manifest that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping at some point we can go into the contact exercise, because it's a real tool that comes out of this body of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can fit that in. Did you have something else there from the chat?
No major comments, except that Brisa wants to thank Tamara for her comment.
Yes, and thank you for your comment. So I was gifted the other day with the Love Poems from God. And these are from 12 different voices, east and west, of mystic poets. And much of the literature that is offered as sermon, therefore as instruction, comes as if you are receiving a description of something. But when you hear the poems of a mystic, you hear the experience. So this one is from the poet named Saint Catherine of Siena. The hymns of the earth. I wanted to be a hermit and only hear the hymns of the earth and the laughter of the sky and the sweet gossip of the creatures on my limbs, the forest. I wanted to be a hermit and not see another face look upon mine and tell me I was not all the beauty in this world So many faces do that, Jesus. The wings we have are so fragile. They can break from just one word or a glance, void of love. I wanted to live in that cloister of light, silence. Because is it not true? The heart is so fragile and shy. And again, I'm going to return to this sermon. Because the instruction for the practitioner says, the practitioner should always remain calm and centered in his own spiritual essence during the moments of death, in the presence of fear, illness, and confusion. Because he knows about death and what happens between death and rebirth, and he is able to center on the knowledge of what is really happening spiritually during illness, dying, and death. So the expression of this particular mystic about sitting in the stillness of light silence, because the heart is fragile and shy, is the same instruction that is given that the practitioner should always remain calm and centered in his own spiritual essence during the moments of death, etc. Now, when I hear a sermon, I take it to mean that it is a indication of what is the direction that I need to go, that there's some place for me to be. And if the instruction here is to remain calm and centered in my own spiritual essence, it indicates that I have previously been calm and centered in my own spiritual essence, and that is the job of the practitioner at the bedside, is to be centered in his own spiritual essence. That's a clue to me about what the nature of the death experience has as its opportunity.
Is it all right if I share a personal?
I believe this is just exactly the right time to share a personal.
Well, I would say was maybe a year or two before my grandmother died, and one of her favorite psalms was the 23rd Psalms, and she would always recite it before she went to bed. And I was sitting with her, and it came to the part about, and thou preparest a table in the presence of my enemies. And after she finished, I said, you know, I've never really understood that. I mean, I don't, you know, it just seemed like such a strange image, you know, you're setting the table, but your enemies are all around you. And she says, oh, she says, but don't you know who your enemies are? And I said, well, no, I don't think I understand what you mean. And she says, well, fear, confusion. And she said, and so here you are, you're surrounded by these things that you've named, the fear and the confusion and disharmony and grief, but you're there with your beloved, and the table is being set, and you're in this special relationship. And so it just really changed that whole scripture, you know, for me, and the idea that when you're in that intimate connection with the beloved, you know, death comes as the beloved, that those enemies are irrelevant because you're in that center of union and sharing. And several of the people that I've had a chance of working with who before their death would have dreams of this, you know, being invited to Jesus's birthday party or a feast or a wedding. And so there's really this theme that comes up of being called to the table and the celebration of being called to that common table. And so the fear, and you see the illusory nature, but it was a very profound lesson for me, and I hope I translated a little bit of the feel that I got from her in that.
Well, especially from your grandmother.
Yes.
It holds a lot.
Yes.
When you get it from your from your elders.
Yeah,
you got something to say? We can hand you the phone. No. Dan. And Dick? Yes, okay, good. So I'm going to move us from number one to number two. So if you are still in the posture of hearing a sermon, return to whatever that posture was for you and hear the second Sunday sermon, two. During the moments of death, the practitioner occupies the place to which Jesus referred when he said to his disciples, "Ye are the salt of the earth, ye are the light of the world." So yes, we hear now from Dick. Go ahead. Yes.
Hey, ready? Yes. If you're working with a person who's dying, remember that you're guiding a being that existed before birth of the body and will exist after the death of the body. And okay.
Hey, you know, the broadcast ended and it's restarting.
Oh, yes, okay, the broadcast.
Okay. Okay, but I think that probably came across. We'll ask people if that comment came across.
Say it again.
Okay, Patricia's asking to say it again. Oops. Okay, I think he hung up. So the comment was to remember that we're working with a being that existed before the birth of the body and will continue to exist after the death of the body.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Silverdale. So we're going to take the broadcast down and come back up. You don't need to do anything. Just stay there. The broadcast will come back up in a moment. Did you tell the people on the chat that it's going down? you. And we're back up? Okay, not yet. It looked the same. Okay, well, she'll let us know. We are back up. We're going to read from the second Sunday sermon. During the moments of death, the second Sunday sermon. During the moments of death, the practitioner occupies the place to which Jesus referred when he said to his disciples, "Ye are the salt of the earth. Ye are the light of the world."
You, the practitioner, are the solid rock and the foundation upon which the family of the dying or deceased can lean when all other foundations fail.
The beliefs will fail them.
Medicine will ultimately fail.
The doctors will finally fail.
The nurses will fail.
The psychological methods of mental self-hypnosis and buffering of reality will fail.
The only one who will succeed will be you.
Among all those assembled to help the sick or dying individual, whether family, friend, doctor, or nurse, you are the only one who can actually do something for him after he dies.
The doctor is helpless after the moments of death. But for you, the practitioner, the task of guiding and preparing for rebirth has just begun.
This is your area of expertise.
You are now the able one, the one who knows, understands what can be done, and knows how to do it.
Everyone there, the deceased, his family and his friends, the doctor, and in fact, all sentient life everywhere and all spiritual life are depending upon you and praying for you to remain centered and calm, competent and certain, as you guide the deceased through the difficult stages of transit and into a better rebirth or into liberation from the world of matter.
The absolute truth of infinite and eternal spirit comes to light in this new age. And through the revelations of this great teaching, the truth will arrive at every heart, thus bringing about the attainment and liberation of all beings in the six worlds through the teaching in the direct lineage of the divine teachers.
Since absolute truth is eternal and infinite, the nothingness of fear and confusion can be easily seen in the spirit.
Since truth is all that is real, non-truth or material beliefs should be recognized as having no power at all, either in the world of matter or in the world of the divine spirit.
The fact is that the divine spirit is the void, clear and perfect, luminous and transparent, and that voidness is by nature completely harmless and painless and is therefore real, as the spirit is also harmless and painless, and the pure spirit is boundless and without limit, but the material world is full of confusion and pain and therefore unreal.
If the material world were compelled to stand before the truth of spirit, it would vanish.
That is, in fact, what does happen when the being who was matter, but is now spirit, stands before the truth.
He still feels, acts, and thinks as a material body.
When he faces reality, his material body and mind vanish in an instant.
And the practitioner, knowing that this will happen, simply guides the deceased through the shock of this surprise.
Of course, anyone who has had the training of this teaching wouldn't be surprised or shocked at this because they have already transformed themselves into spirit and have established their identity as spirit rather than as material man. So Silverdale, I've been thinking about you the whole time I'm reading these paragraphs because it seems like this formulation is just another version of what you said earlier. But what do you think about it?
Well, you know, again, very much what impresses me is the look, what we're trying to do in our efforts is to take our essence, which is nothing more than clear, bright, shining light, and has a latent potential for us, to develop something that we call presence, and that presence is what gives to us stability and centrality as a part of that clear light. That's what that presence is, the product of the developed essence. And so a practitioner, someone who has personally developed presence, has already been through this and understands exactly how all of this, how the spirit relates to the material world and what happens in those moments of separation. And you know, this just, you know, affirms that to us.
Mhm. Well, just kind of a little bit of a sidelight, but there's, as we've been going through the books, and Patricia described it as kind of being scouts and explorers, I've become more and more grateful for the depth of these writings, because on one level it's simple and sounds scriptural, but as you dig into it, there's more and more into it. And like, for example, in the first paragraph, ye are the salt of the earth. Well, just a day or two ago, DJ was talking about the trade routes that originally, you know, was salt, and that all major civilizations are built next to, you know, salt fields. And so Hassan, reading this, you know, it's just not a, you know, a little picturesque image. I mean, what's being said is it's very profound. And then ye are the light of the world. I just started reading for a father of a friend, and he had just passed. And so I was reading this morning, and as I was reading the clear light, I was looking out my window, and the sun was shining, and my eyes got sort of caught up with it, and that sense of this, you know, this immense beingness of light that radiates always, you know, even when it's dark to us, it's there, and you know, it radiates to all beings, and there was something about, like, when I looked from the sun back down at the photograph, the photograph was like the light was pouring through the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a couple hours afterwards, when I was in town, I was having that sensation of that, you know, the body was almost kind of like rags on people, and there was this light pouring through them. And so, you know, it's not just like, oh, symbolic, poetic images. They're factual statements about the nature of being. So, sorry, I didn't mean to take it off of that, but it was just I was just stuck with those first two, you know, two little images there.
Yeah, I should have let you just say those first two sentences over and over again. Go ahead.
Reza 24 says, because at the end you realize you've been in the same room all this time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. This same room, this chamber here where the sermons are, and the chamber that each of you has where you are hearing this Sunday sermon number one and number two, as if it were your first comprehensible sermons that you have access to. Now, when we come together in the same time next week, we will study sermon three and four. And if you choose, you can have a recording of the Sunday sermons, which is, Marvette, are they on the ABB show? Where are they? You know, the readings that we have? We don't have a spot where they are yet?
No.
Okay, well, we might want to put, we just want to pick one and put one up for people to hear.
One.
No, but I want to identify them. Okay.
You want to study them, because I've definitely picked one out that I want done at my funeral. So.
That's right. You want to pick your own sermon. Yes. Is that a call-in? From our participating
Dick just wanted to thank you both for your work.
Oh. Thank you. And we thank you for your work, too.
To the heart, Master.
It's time for us to close for this evening, but please do take a look at the Sunday sermons for next week, 3 and 4, and bring your own recollections, remembrances, and reminiscences of the Sunday sermons that you know of, and we will share those together next time. Thank you so much for being here this night, and we'll see you again next week at 7 o'clock.
Thanks, Tamara and Pat.
Yes.
Amen.
Thank you for being with us, Sarah Vulgaris. It's great to have you right there on the phone. I so appreciate it.
Yes.
Well, now I'm looking forward to next Wednesday night.
Okay.
Well, it's always going to be the same room, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Good night. Okay. Stop. No, two stops. Hit stop.